Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Coming up today, we're going to talk business. A day before the start of the NFL draft, Curtis Allen from the Seahawks draft blog is going to be joining me. He is one of the best out there at breaking down salary cap implications and really dissecting where the Seahawks stand in regards to payroll allocation. And we're going to look at that. We're going to look at both 2024 and 2025. There is not a lot of money available. In fact, the Seahawks are going to have to create some salary cap space this year just to get some basic things done, for example, signing their draft picks. We're going to dive into that, talk about some solutions, how they could create that space both this year and next year, including a couple of big moves with big name players that might have to come into play. Curtis Allen of the Seahawks draft blog talking salary cap today on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Viens.
Don't forget to hit that like button on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, and hit the bell for notification of all future episodes. You can also subscribe to the audio feed on any podcast platform you prefer, but if you want to hear ad-free episodes, a small monthly fee on Spotify will do that for you. That link will be in the description. You can also just contribute to me and the show by buying me a coffee or hitting that super thanks button down below. Let's get right into this. Curtis took some time away. He is vacationing on the islands today. He's in Hawaii, Maui, I believe, to be specific. And actually, that opened up his schedule a little bit and allowed us to get together. We've been trying to schedule this for a couple of weeks. So here's my conversation today with Curtis Allen. All right, as promised, Curtis Allen joining us today from the islands on vacation. Thank you for taking time out from the beach to join me on the show today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's nice to be on. It's a great privilege, so I appreciate it, Dan.
And we were talking about before I hit record that I was a little disappointed that you weren't actually oceanside, but you had a good reason for that. We were worried about some noise, right?
Yeah, I set up outside just to get the whole palm trees waving in the breeze effect, a little bit of the beach in the background, but some birds had something to say to that, and they were just absolutely ear piercing. So I thought, I'll just move inside, but I still have a little breeze going. You'll probably hear them a little bit in the background, so we can get some ambient, you know, Hawaii noises.
I don't think anyone will be mad about that, especially here in Seattle. We had a really nice run. If we had talked yesterday, I might have been able to match wits with you. It was 74 degrees, and the mountain was out, and it was beautiful. But now
here.
But now it's just, we're back to regular Seattle weather. To be doom and gloom and bring some dark clouds into the Seahawks conversation, because, you know, everyone has been on such a high the last few months with all the changes and the coaching staff. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes new and fresh is exciting. Sometimes it's scary, yeah. But, you know, new players, new schemes, new possibilities. But there's a reality to this too. And the part that fans might not want to think about this time of year, but you do such an amazing job of breaking this stuff down and keeping up with it. And you just posted a piece on Seahawks draft blog, Rob Staton's website that you work on, where you go into great detail about this. And I want to give people a picture of where they stand. Let's start today. Where does the team stand now on salary cap heading into the draft for 2024?
Well, they don't have a lot of money. They basically spent all the money that they have out in the market. So they, according to over the cap, they have $1.6 million. So they just don't have a lot of money in their tap. A lot of that isn't necessarily the fact that they went on a spending spree. It's just that they're paying for what they did last year. Mm. Like, for instance, they pushed out somewhere in the neighborhood of $18 million between Tyler Lockett, Quandre Diggs, and Jamal Adams into this year. And so that's got to go somewhere. And it's on the books this year, and it's now on the books as dead cap in the case of Adam Dick, because they're not on the team anymore. But that money becomes basically guaranteed money once you restructure. So, like, for instance, Jamal Adams last year around September, they did his deal. His money was not guaranteed. There was only like $2 million and change guaranteed of his salary this year. They converted it right before camp to get their practice squad money and et cetera. And it basically, you know, fixed it into a real amount that they can't negotiate down or negotiate away from. So it moved it into this year. So that's part of it. Probably the other part that we've seen over the years is they really went for it. They were very aggressive last year. For instance, Draymond Jones, they signed him to a very nice contract, probably the biggest in history, if I recall, for the Seahawks, biggest free agent mm-hmm. contract. And they basically structured it to fit under their cap last year. So he had kind of a pretty aggressively low cap hit. And now here comes this year with a pretty healthy cap hit. And the next year it's in the high 20s. So, you know, they're kind of visiting some of the aggression that they saw last year on the cap. And that's kind of the reality of the cap at times, Dan, is it's not this year that you're affecting with your moves as much as next year, the year after as well. So we're kind of figuring that out now and paying the price, so to speak.
Yeah, it's interesting context when you look back at moves such as that. The move for Leonard Williams at the trade deadline, it all did smack of the idea that they kind of knew they were at the end of the road with Pete Carroll and needed to win in order to kind of keep him around, or at least finish on the right note, take one last shot at contending for a championship. The Seahawks have always done things different contractually. And John Gilbert at Field Goals does a couple years ago wrote a nice piece about this, and I've talked to him on the show about it, how the Seahawks pay the middle class more than most other teams in the league. They also refuse more than some other teams to do long-term deals. They prefer the 3-year deals and on rare occasion will go 4 years. That makes it tighter against the cap, right? Because you can't kick the can down the road quite as far. You can't.
Absolutely.
You can't. But in some ways, does it also give them some more flexibility to do the things that they did last year, as you mentioned, going right up until training camp and in order to sign their draft picks. And then even heading into this offseason when it looked like they didn't have much money to spend. And then, you know, a couple of moves later, they had quite a bit of money to spend. Does it also kind of give them some unique flexibility in that respect?
It does. It does allow them to be more flexible. And John Schneider has never been afraid of the in-season trade that really gets the Seahawks a nice piece. So we had Leonard Williams, Carlos Dunlap mm-hmm. a couple of years ago that was a heist basically.
Yeah.
And Jadeveon Clowney just before, literally like 3 days before the season started. And that happens because he's got some money in the bank. And that's something that he's always wanted to, and he's spoken about that with his mentor, Ron Wolf has mentioned, you always want to have a little bit of money in the bank. So mm-hmm. you're able to make a move to add to yourself, because during the season, there's always something that may happen that you just don't predict. Like Dunlap being unhappy with the ownership group there and having a real problem. So they basically a low draft pick and the center that I'm blanking on now that they traded over, just who was kind of a bust already. Yeah. So, you know, they're able to do things like that and have some flexibility. The downside is those 1-year deals can be really killer if they're not really productive players. So if they're on a contract where they're 1 or 2 years, there's no real wiggle room as far as getting some cap room available for them to move things around a little bit. They have to earn their money. They have to be able to provide the value for their cap. We've seen that in over a couple of years. We had Gabe Jackson was okay, but he had a couple of high cap hit years. Puna Ford, at the end of his contract, his last year was $10 million against the cap.
Yeah.
And you know, when he went to Buffalo. I mean, he wasn't even starting in Buffalo and was inactive, a healthy scratch for a lot of games. So you kind of see, I've kind of dubbed that, try not to be too clever, kind of that as, you know, dead cap space is cap space for players no longer on the roster, right? I've kind of dubbed that comatose cap space, like the patient is still alive, still breathing, but are they functioning and really providing value to the team? And it's a struggle. There's been a few of those contracts that they picked up that just have not done well. Greg Olson was a real big one that they put in a lot of money and hardly any targets, hardly any action that year. And the first game, he had a ball off his hands that was intercepted for a pick six. And it was kind of downhill from there for a large cap commitment. So as with everything with the cap, it swings both ways. The sword really can cut both ways. So really this is going to sound very, very obvious. The best cap strategy is to play well, to draft well.
Yeah.
Really is to draft well. And then when you get a player that you're on a 1 year deal with, he's got to snap in like a puzzle piece and just like a well-oiled machine. You can't do this. Oh, he's 6 games in. He's still getting used to the defense and he doesn't understand the calls on the offense and the protection schemes. And you can't do that. You just can't. So coaching has a huge impact on whether these moves are successful.
Yeah, and it does seem like this year, so many 1 year deals again, but many of them of the smaller variety. They were really able to attract some players who, for whatever reason, their markets were depressed, and they were able to get low cap hits and maybe some upside. The Tomlinson deal has some incentives built in, but there aren't any Luke Joeckel contracts this time around, right, at least in this group. But before we talk about 2025, so $1.6 million available today, but you have the draft to pay for. You have practice squad. You have exactly what you talked about. They like to set some money aside for contingencies for either unexpected injuries or maybe the opportunity to make an acquisition later in the year. How much money do the Seahawks need to create in order to cover just those basics?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Well, basically, we're gonna be talking at about $11.5 to $12 million right now that they'll need. Over the cap has Tomlinson's cap hit as just his salary, $1.2 million, and so that's great. But the incentives that have been built in, he's a warrior. You plug him in, he'll never not play. Yeah. So a lot of his incentives are, we better count them against the cap and let them be earned. So there's a little bit more than just the $1.2 million. It says up to $4 million. Mm-hmm. And when I look at the cap, I'm always, my background is in accounting and budgeting. You might
You can tell that. You can tell.
You've got to budget for more expense than what you're actually going to cover.
Still trying to learn that lesson myself.
It's always a good, it's always good, something that you need to do. And so what they'll do is they'll have about $8 million that they'll want to bank for the practice squad. They'll want a few extra dollars for injury replacements. A player gets injured, he doesn't go off the salary cap.
Right.
It's not like the NHL. And they'll need players to come in and replace those guys. So you always want some cushion there. And you could end up having some money left over that you roll into the following year, depending on how your injury luck goes. So it could be any number of things, but you need to be prepared for some contingencies there. And some teams, they've gotten their $8 million for that practice squad on the cap. They don't get it September 1st or August 29th. They just kind of do it as they go, because you don't need to pay that on your cap until you actually pay the players. So some teams parse it out, and really maybe the Seahawks don't need to do that right at the end of August.
Right.
But the bill's going to come due. So that's why I always include it.
Just like last year when Witherspoon didn't report day one, you know, it took them 3-4 days. They had to move some things around first.
Exactly right.
What's the easiest, most painless way to get to that number?
Yeah, and so that's the hard part, Dan, because they've got some options. So Geno Smith, they could convert his salary to bonus, pick up $5.8 million or even less. That's just the max they can pick up. Okay. DK Metcalf, $5.9 million. So right there, there's almost the $12 million that they need to cover their basic expenses for this year. The problem is that goes on the 2025 cap now. So you're just taking the $12 million and you're putting it on a credit card, and the bill's going to come due in 2025, just like you did with Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, Tyler Lockett last year. So it's not a matter of, oh, we'll just push it out. It's a matter of, you know, what's more important to you? Is it 2025 or is it 2024?
Right.
Now, last year, the question in 2023 was 2023 is far more important than 2024. That's why we're kind of in the situation we're in, and it's not one that the Seahawks have really typically employed, where they've been this far underwater at this point in the year. They've always liked to have a little bit more breathing room. So this is I won't say new ground, but newer ground for them. But it's a consequence of, you know, having to press against the cap with some of these moves that they've made.
And you talk about now a little bit more extreme possibility, and maybe the quickest, most swift move that they could make to open up cap space, not just in 24, but in 25, which we're going to talk about in a minute, is if they were to do something with Draymond Jones. You mentioned how they structured that contract. He had, by all accounts, a disappointing first year, just didn't really make the impact people were hoping for. There is some optimism that Mike McDonald, with his track record of developing players and also just the scheme that he runs, that he might be able to get the best out of Draymond Jones. And if Jones begins to play like a Pro Bowl type player, then that contract actually, as far as interior defensive linemen go, is pretty reasonable in some respects. Sure. But if you were to find a trade partner for him, I think there's some different numbers pre or post June 1 that you have. You clear up pretty significant amount of space this year and next, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So a lot of it is post June 1 is the better way to go. So if you trade him post June 1, you'd pick up about $10.5 million in cap space. So there could be a situation where they find a trade partner and then pick up that money. And then that kind of clears that. It clears off $16.5 million in 2025, which is, you know, that's a great number that they could work with very well. So there's that. You know, they could just cut him loose and split the money. They pick up $3.5 million, but also the $16.5 million next year. So there's options there, but the challenge is if they're going to trade him, everybody and their brother knows that they're why they're trading him. And so the return would not be, you'd think a mid 20s to high 20s defensive tackle who's had his career so far would get, you know, a decent draft pick, if not a third, maybe a fourth round pick. But it probably wouldn't, that'd be a very happy expectation to get that out of that deal at that point, because they're just trying to clear up room. And it really, you know, it wouldn't be, it'd be more of a salary cap dump kind of a situation. And there might even be something along the lines of Leonard Williams. You know, if, hey, we'll pick up X dollars on the contract, you give us a better draft pick. There might be something to be worked in there. But I will say the Seahawks have said we were looking forward to deploying around the line. We've got plans for him. We're excited about him. Doesn't necessarily mean they're actually going to do that.
Sure.
The staff has made comment that, they're excited about him.
Yeah, as they should be, for all the reasons you mentioned. You know, a guy that there was a reason they gave him that money. There were other teams interested. There was a market for him. He's in his mid-20s, and he's shown that kind of upside. It's a fascinating scenario because they don't have to do anything today. But also, we may feel differently about this scenario 36 hours from now, because if the Seahawks were to draft a Byron Murphy or a Johnny Newton, right? Or, you know, somebody on the interior defensive line, or even later on a Chris Jenkins or Tavondre Sweat, pick your guy. There's, you know, that depth on the defensive line. We feel a lot better about it today than we did a year ago at this time when they were going into day three and we were like, what are they doing about the defensive line? It's interesting. So the possibility exists then, or the opportunity, if you want to use that word, for them to go to camp with him, see how he fits, see how they think it's going to work.
Yeah.
And then also combined with what they acquire during the draft and undrafted free agency, et cetera, that they would still have that luxury.
There is one more option that they could do. And I'll be honest, Dan, I hesitate to mention it. They could restructure his contract.
Okay.
And take about $4.95 million and push it into the future years.
Okay.
So in other words, he has a $23 million hit for 2025 now. It'd be almost a $29 million hit. Mm. So that's what we're getting at, is there's tough decisions all up and down the board. And with the Seahawks, it's always about projecting. You always want to project what is going to work best for you. And I hesitate to say that. They just haven't done that very well. Quandre Diggs didn't perform well last year. Yeah. Jamal Adams, they didn't really get what they wanted out of him because he was just so injured last year. Is still covering from the injury. So, you know, I'm hesitant to talk about this restructuring. I'm fine with restructuring DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that because they're going to extend him one way or another. They've got to keep a blue chip player on the roster. So that cap hit will come down as they restructure him in 2025. So I like restructuring young, talented players with time left on their contract. I do not like restructuring older, perennially injured players who have a bunch of money on their contract and you just need breathing room.
Yeah.
It just creates all kinds of problems. And that's why they're squeezing right now for cap.
And if you're a fan and you're watching this and this is all making you a little bit nervous, we're going to talk about 2025 now, and it's probably not going to get any better for you. It's, you know, it's interesting now that we have all the access to these websites and we can see this stuff for ourselves. I prefer over the cap. I just like their calculator a little bit better. It's a little more intuitive. It's at the beginning of the off season when the Seahawks didn't have a lot of cap space for 2024 before they made the moves that they did, you could at least as a fan look ahead and go, well, I think at the beginning of the offseason, there was something like $50 to $60 million available in 25 and over $200 million available in 26. And now those numbers have shrank considerably, although in 2026, you're still at six figures. 2025's dried up pretty quick, too, with some of the moves they've made this offseason, right? There isn't a lot to look forward to there either.
Yeah, so 2025, over the cap, has $2.99 million of room. Now, they have not adjusted their total cap ceiling up yet.
Right.
They still have it at $260 million or so. And it's not going to be $260 million. It's basically they had a everybody had a really nice surprise this year with the cap revenue going up to $255 million. So there is no way that it's just going to go up $5 million in 2025.
Yeah.
Not if Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift have anything to say about it. So it's going to be, I would guess a typical cap. I wrote in the piece about $275
okay.
or so. So they'll pick up about $15 million. I'm just taking the average increase from the last few years, specifically pre-COVID, because everything went haywire with COVID. So about $15 million more dollars. But again, that's starting out with $17, $18 million is not enough to even pay the bills. So you're paying your draft, you're paying this year's draft class, which isn't on the books yet. The next year draft class, you've got some players coming up that are going to get some well-deserved raises through their contracts. Mm-hmm. And so, again, you're back in a situation where, okay, we're instead of just managing your cap and, okay, how do we spend money? It's how do we create money? How do we open up space to get that? So there's a couple options there, but, it's because of this run-up that they've had the last couple of years with their cap, it's starting to kind of become a situation where there's going to be critical decisions going to be made right now in the draft tomorrow and this fall and next spring. So just like they cut Diggs, they cut Adams, they made some other changes. So we're going to see something like that. And it's not a matter of do we like this player or is this our favorite player. There's going to be some hard-born financial decisions that are going to have to be made.
And that cap number you talk about for 2025, another point of context, that's only 33 players under contract also mm-hmm. at this point. And just though to give fans a different picture, right? It's not all doom and gloom. I thought I would take a snapshot of what the rest of the division looks like as well and kind of going bottom to top. Obviously, the Cardinals doing essentially a full rebuild, except, they've hung their hat on Kyler Murray, decided to stick with him. Their 2025 picture, 25 players under contract, about $113 million in cap space. But they have a lot of work to do. The Rams, 44 players under contract, $12.4 million available. So they're tight for 25. And then the 49ers, they've been playing this game for a while. They've been in go for it mode for a while, and it's starting to catch up to them now. Even with the luxury of having a starting quarterback on a rookie deal, 2025 with 38 players under contract, they are $24 million over the cap as we sit here today. Just to give, because I just wanted to look at the top, just to give fans a picture, Kansas City Chiefs have been the class of the league for the last 5 or 6 years. They have just under $40 million in cap space showing available for 2025, but only 25 players under contract at this point. That's what happens when you pay a franchise quarterback franchise money, as well as Chris Jones and some other guys on there as well. So when we look ahead to 2025, though, one decision would seem to be moving the largest of all. And we may get some clarity on that this weekend. We may get some clarity on it later in the season. But Geno Smith, to me, seems to be the tipping point, because he's an older quarterback. And in 2025, his cap hit would be $38.5 million, of which, correct me if I'm wrong, but just according to Over the Cap, they could save $25 million by moving on from him next year. Is that about the right number?
Right. If they don't restructure anything this year. So
right.
There's
I guess,
5 points, the $5 million that they could restructure from him. That basically becomes a guaranteed cap hit on next year's as well. So if they cut him right now, it looks like they could pick up $25 million if they cut him before the roster bonus is due in early March. That would be less than $20 million now if they move that money to the next year. So that's why you kind of, it's a shell game. You're kind of moving pieces from one to the other. So
yeah, make or break year for him and the Seahawks at the quarterback position. If he goes out and has I think there's a whole range of possibilities, but if he goes out and just struggles, age catches up to him, or he doesn't fit with Ryan Grubb or whatever, then it's an easy decision. If he plays lights out, then it becomes a really tricky decision, right? But then maybe you're even considering, is there a trade market for him if you really want to commit to going to a younger quarterback at that point? Or do you maybe extend him a year or two, which, as you mentioned in your article, is kind of tricky with a guy his age. Do they like Sam Howell enough that they can make that move? Because he's only making his cap. It's $1.2 million or something like that next year. It's peanuts. It's even less. His cap hit next year would be less than it would be if you drafted a rookie quarterback.
Right.
And so to me, that would seem to be when we get to this point, or even not this point, as you mentioned, in March, January, February next year, a decision on Geno is going to have to be made first and foremost. And that'll clarify a lot of this, us.
I'm of the opinion it almost doesn't matter what he does this year. I don't think he'll be on the roster next year.
If he goes
lights out. Don't forget, he's got $15 million of escalators available. Remember from matching his 2022 number. So if he nails all escalators, his cap hit will be $53.5 million next year.
Yeah.
And they don't have the money they just don't have the money to pay that, and they wouldn't pay it anyway. So thankfully, though, when they sign the contract, they're escalators. They're not incentives, which means they're not guaranteed.
Yeah.
So they could cut him. They could trade him, move on from him, and not have to pay that $15 million. So he doesn't play well. Yeah, we need to move on. He does play awesome. We can't afford him. We just can't afford. I mean, the value proposition just isn't there.
Wow. What a fascinating scenario that could turn out to be. And then the other one, when you look at the chart for next year, that's really glaring is, you know, we've been dealing with just kind of a lack of balance in how they've spread out their payroll allocation positionally on the roster for the last couple of years. And all the attention the last few years was at the safety position and all the money they were paying there. And they've made that correction, although still paying in for it this year, but at least they made that move to move on from Diggs and Adams and kind of bring that back into balance. And then they go out and kind of do what is the trend in the NFL these days. And they get some good value on the free agent market. A guy like Rayshon Jenkins.
For sure.
Excuse me. And even Julian Love, I think last year fit into that position. Right now, the imbalance positionally would seem to be the wide receiver position. That you have so much money tied up in Tyler and DK. In 2024 alone, $43.4 million in combined cap hit. That's 17% of the cap. Excuse me. Next year, that goes up to over $60 million combined, depending on what they do this year. In similar vein to what we just talked about with Geno Smith, it would seem to me no matter how he plays this year, that this we're very quite possibly looking at the last season of Tyler Lockett.
I agree. Yeah. I think it's there's a balance there between both of them that he could have a great year this year and then just sail off into the sunset. He could retire and just enjoy his life in real estate and, you know, become one of the Seahawks legends.
It wouldn't surprise me if they've had those conversations, right? Like if that's part of the plan and that's why they're so comfortable continuing to take money from him and kind of move it down the road.
Yeah. I'm a little contrarian about Tyler Lockett because number one, I love the guy. I love what he's done for Seattle.
Oh, absolutely.
When Pete Carroll signed him to his last deal, he said, that's a Seahawk. Mm-hmm. That's a Seahawk right there. Shows up to work. He's always on time. He's professional. You throw the ball where it's supposed to be and he'll catch it. That kind of a Seahawk. And he's always been agreeable to extending his contract before you really need to. And the Seahawks have gotten great value over the years with him. They signed him to the first deal and everybody was like, whoa, that's a huge deal. Turns out it was a great value. They signed him to a second deal. Oh, wow. Those are big numbers. It turned out to be great value because the wide receiver market exploded and he could have played the line and gone to the Jets or the Giants or, you know, some terrible team, frankly, that's quarterback needy, gotten a bucket of money and just left the Seahawks behind. But no, he's provided great value as a wide receiver for the Seahawks. And if you want a bonus hot take, I would love him to be a punt returner or a kick returner again. But I acknowledge that's probably not going to go down that road at his age. But
it's amazing how quickly that changes. The Seahawks PR team put out a video yesterday or the day before on Twitter. You probably saw it where it was an amazing, I love this technique. I've seen it multiple times with different players recently where they kind of splice college and pro highlights together, but they take plays that look similar. And so it looks like he's turning from a Kansas State Wildcat into a Seattle Seahawk. And how quickly we forget what a dynamic kick and punt returner he was earlier in his career, because now we look at him and every time he catches the ball, we're afraid he's going to get hit and he's going to get hurt. He looks so tiny and fragile. Maybe that's just because we're used to seeing the dude on the other end of the other side of the field and how massive he is. And let's talk about that. One of the most popular offseason storylines among Seahawks fans. It just won't go away. I saw it all over Twitter today. The opportunity, the possibility of trading DK Metcalf. There's been a lot of talk this offseason about Brandon Ayuk. The 49ers won a first round pick. AJ Brown got a first and a third a couple of years ago, former teammate of DK. So maybe that's a similar comp. I have pushed back against that. I've been open to the conversation just because I think anytime you're trying to manage a roster, you have to be open to all possibilities. But I think he's such a dynamic talent. And I also believe that there's more to be had, that our offensive coordinators that he's had haven't truly gotten the best out of him, and that potentially Ryan Grubb could. And so one of the possibilities you talked about is kind of moving some of his money around from this year to next year, or doing a restructure. But next year, this Seahawks typically don't do extensions 2 years early, but next offseason, I would imagine that would be a big topic of conversation, is you could extend him and thus give him a low 25 cap hit, right? And save quite a bit of money that way.
For sure. I would initiate talks right now, but he's too smart for that. Justin Jefferson's going to get a deal. Jamar Chase is going to get a deal, and the market is just going to explode.
On that note,
Amon Rod just got his deal. Yep,
4 years, $120 million, $77 million guaranteed for basically a possession receiver.
Right. Yeah. Now, I tweeted this morning, my guess is there's about $50 or $60 million on the end of that deal that he'll never see, because that's the way they've done a lot of wide receivers have done their 4 year deals. Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, Nuke Hopkins, they all have this gigantic balloon number that is non-guaranteed at the end, so they can say we're in the honeymoon period right now. We don't have the actual details yet, and we're getting, you know, he's the highest paid wide receiver.
These are the agent numbers.
Correct. So DK wouldn't. He probably wouldn't. I mean, who knows? Maybe Tyler Lockett might take him out for a coffee and say, "Hey, this is what I did, and it's always worked out for me."
Right.
But on that, Dan, on a weekly basis, I write a game preview for Seahawks draft blog that gets posted on game day, and just kind of a strategy post, what I'm seeing with the opposition and how the team is playing, and there's a weakness on the defense. And last fall, when the Eagles came to town, I wrote heavily about how the Eagles were the worst team in the NFL guarding wide receivers. Nobody had given up more yards, catches, everything to wide receivers than the Philadelphia Eagles. I spent the entire game tweeting and yelling at the TV, get DK the ball, pass him the ball. Because that last drive was evidence where they finally woke up and got it. Right then, they had one catch. I think he had one catch for 8 yards on three targets at that point. So I wanted the game that DK played his rookie year when he took Darius Slay to school. You remember that? He came in and it was 10 catches for 170 yards. And Darius Slay in the locker room afterward was like, whoa, who is this that I just played? Yeah. So that's what I wanted. And I think there's a lot of meat on the bone with his play. And, that's one of the reasons, if we're being completely honest, I'm really looking forward to seeing if Michael Penix ends up on the team, because that would be a Penix Odunze connection. Yeah. You see DK in single coverage?
Sure.
Throw it, you'll go get it.
Yeah, that's the one thing I love about Penix is, for as much as people want to pick apart his game, the thing I love. And I saw it from the opposing sideline because I'm a Coug, and he did it to us 2 years ago, especially in Pullman, where when he senses a matchup, a favorable matchup, he will continue to go to it until you prove you can stop it. And even he's like that 3-point shooter that, you know, if you're in a slump, shoot until you're out of it. And if you're hot, keep shooting because you're hot. And he'll do that. He'll just pick you to death.
That's a great description of Penix's game.
Yeah. Let's talk about the draft because, you know, that's kind of a thing right now that everybody wants to focus on. And you mentioned earlier that the best way to maximize your payroll allocation is, you know, good players have to play good and the players that you pay have to play good. And I also think as we look at this picture that you've just painted over, you know, the rest of this year and next, that also it is imperative that these last two Seahawk draft classes that have been widely recognized as being deep and high quality, that some of those guys have to become significant starters and that there has to be some development out of that so that you can maximize those rookie contracts moving into 25 and 26. Guys like, you know, out of last year's class, Derek Hall, Cam Young, Mike Morris in the front seven, right? Those guys have to become contributors on the offensive line. Anthony Bradford, potentially Olu Oluwatimi, if he could show himself to be a capable starter at center, that's a spot they don't have to worry about for 3 years. And it's at fifth round money. You know, some of the safeties, Jarek Reed, Reek Woolen with a big bounce back year would be a tremendous savings for them to be able to have your two starting lockdown corners essentially in Witherspoon and Woolen be on rookie deals. And then the tackle position is going to tell us a lot. I have said for a while that we're going to find out just how confident they are in Abe Lucas's knee potentially tomorrow, especially if they were to trade down, because it's such a great right tackle class. If they were to take one of those guys that plays right tackle but can also play guard, that might tell you something. But also because even if Lucas comes back healthy, 2 years from now, they got some decisions to make about paying tackles. And today, Penei Sewell, you talk about agent numbers, another little piece of news, Penei Sewell of the Lions.
Yes.
4 years, $112 million, the largest contract ever on paper today for an offensive lineman. So the young guys have to play well and they have to hit on this draft class.
They really do. Yeah, we need a lot of that low cost value to really kick in and show itself this year. One of the ones that I'm curious about really is Tariq Woolen, was seeing how he plays this year. The first year was such a revelation with him. And I actually wrote about this. Will he come into the second year? Oh, okay, you've got the skill, you've got the experience, but now we need to fill you in on some of the more, you know, the mundane formation setup details. And then you fill his head with all kinds of stuff and he's thinking too much instead of reacting. I think we saw some of that this year. I also think we saw an attitude change. Last year, he was not tackling as much and engaging in the running game defense as much as he did the year before. I went to the first ever training camp with all the rookies there. And I'm like just drooling looking at this guy. 6'4", 220. He's got a DK Metcalf profile on the other side of the defense. And he could jump out of the gym. And in practice, he's lining up on the edges and then battling with a tight end and setting the edge at times. Mm-hmm. And he did it in the mock game as well. And I wrote, man, this guy he's got no qualms about sticking his nose in and making the tough tackles, which that's always an issue with those really super talented cornerbacks. And Richard Sherman was absolutely one of the best at that, not afraid to get his nose in there and tackle. So will Mike McDonald straighten that out and get him back to that level? I thought he was there the year before, but he kind of lost it last year. So, is it just an attitude thing that he can get back to that level? Because that's all Mike McDonald's all about is I want guys who love football, you know, tough, you know, are there to work and smash the other team. So it sounds like a great fit if they can get him to really step up in that way. He could get back to that rookie year form.
And I have to wonder if that shoulder just was never really healthy and it got in his head a little bit and made him a little reluctant. Cause you know, I talk about those videos and what the Seahawks PR team has done. And they did it with Reek Woolen too recently. And there's, you know, I remember this when he came out and there's there's all sorts of plays from his UTSA tape and even his rookie year where he's coming up and laying the lumber and really hitting guys. Yeah. He didn't shy away from anything. I just wonder if maybe there was an issue last year. And then I am encouraged by you. You probably saw these comments as well from Mike McDonald a couple of years ago in a long form interview he did about how he, it was at a coach's clinic he was doing for high school coaches and how he likes to install the defense and how he just installs the basics at first and makes sure that everybody masters all of the different reads off of that before they start installing more so that you can handle it and really know it backwards and forwards. And I wonder if maybe that the first guy that popped into my mind when I read that comment was Reek Woolen, that maybe there was just too much put on his plate too soon for a guy coming from a small school who made a position change, hasn't been playing the position for a long time. And because I just, you know, for all the talk, and I even consider the opportunity or the possibility myself that he might be a trade candidate day two or day three in this draft after the cornerback class falls off. I'm not ready to give up on that guy's upside or ceiling yet, especially with a guy like Mike McDonald coming in to coach.
No, he's too skilled. Yeah. He's just, I mean, human beings with that level are in the 0.01 percentile. So you don't just give up on that and turn away, especially after what you've seen in real life that he can do in his rookie year.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the moves, the Panther game, I was there in the stadium when he saw peripherally the ball coming to another receiver, cut off of his coverage and went over and tipped the ball. It was like he teleported.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all sitting there in the stands going, Did what I just see happen? You know, it's like a hockey goalie that twists himself backwards and you know gets his on a puck. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's too much there.
We got the first appearance by the Hawaiian birds there in the background that you mentioned.
There we go.
Before I let you go, heading into draft day tomorrow, you know, everyone's done their mock drafts. I've done a million and kind of weighed the pros and cons of sticking and picking, moving down, going offense first, defense. If you could sum up your hopes for tomorrow and what direction you want to see them go, where do you lie on that?
Well, I think they've done a great job sort of setting their roster so they don't have an absolute glaring need where they pick. So they have a lot of good choices that they can do. I think at 16, it's a very interesting spot because there's about 10 picks that are probably locked that are going to be in the top 10. You know, three quarterbacks, three wide receivers, a couple of tackles. And then it starts to get a little fun because the next 10 picks or so are kind of where the first round talent ends. Mm-hmm. Is in the next 10 picks or so. So I think I usually have a target that I like. I like this guy and I like that guy, but there are so many picks. Byron Murphy would be a fantastic pick.
Yeah.
I love trench depth. I mean, and they've not had it for a lot of years. So I'm concerned about how Fatano will play out now with the reports of his knee.
Yeah.
So would that be some kind of a crazy situation where he slides, where they trade down and they get Fatano and another player that they really like? That might be something.
Yeah.
And then of course you have the quarterbacks. I mean, if there's a quarterback, I've said if there's a quarterback they rate at 16, they're honor bound, duty bound to pick him. I mean, if there's somebody there that you just have to pick him, whether it's Michael Penix, which of course, I would prefer maybe Spencer Rattler in the second round if they trade down a couple of times.
Yeah.
That might be a really interesting pick to make. He's got a lot of Seahawks qualities to him that John Schneider likes. But I think the only pick I would not like, Dan, and I'm sorry I'm being kind of a pansy here, but the only pick I would not like is like a Cooper DeJean pick.
Hmm. He's kind of a popular name lately, yeah.
I just don't see a player that was, you know, a corner in college and they're saying he'll be a safety in the pros and he'll be this wonderful chess piece that they need. I see you can get players like that in the third or fourth round. There's lots of safeties in this class that you can get. And I think that'd be a reach for them. And honestly, I have concerns about a broken leg at pick 16.
Yeah,
really that dynamic that you would pick him at 16 and put the medicals aside.
Right. It's one of those things. It's just all the more mysterious because we just don't know about this new staff and what they want and what Schneider wants to get him. I've overanalyzed it to death, and I can't wait for it to be here tomorrow. But at the end of the day, I try to appease myself by going back. And when you listen to what Mike McDonald is saying in his interviews, it just sounds like trench, 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 at least in this first draft. And I hope, I hope it plays out that way. I've made the case that they need to add another receiver in this draft, that they need to, you can always add another safety or corner, and that, but at the end of the day, they need to continue to add there, even if it's, you know, even if it's a guy that's not going to contribute a lot as a rookie, as might be the case if they take a defensive lineman, he'll be part of a rotation at best. But just so you can see those building blocks and start to establish a style, right? And an identity and a culture. So, man, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your vacation from Hawaii to do this and finally catch up and give people a clear picture of the business side of this thing. Clearly, if they do trade down, one thing worth mentioning is they'll save some cap slot by doing that. You add picks though too, but the cap hits fall off pretty quickly after the first round. So something to consider there as well. But Curtis Allen contributes to the Seahawks draft blog. Check his stuff out there. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
All right. Thank you. Anytime.
Enjoy the rest of your vacation. All right. So depending on when you're watching this, of course, we are just hours away. 24, 25, 26, 27, 10, 12, depending on what time it is, away from the first round of the NFL draft. So just a reminder, I am going to be live streaming on the channel, reacting to the draft as we watch it together. I prefer the NFL Network feed, so I'll be watching that. And I'll have a whole bunch of stuff queued up. Some of my lists of my guys, some of the draft guides, Dane Brugler's, Emery Hunt's, Shane Hallam's, so that depending on what the Seahawks do, I can give you all the background that you need on that player. And then I also do a shadow draft, where I will tell you when the Seahawks are on the clock who I think they should take or who I would take. And then I do this all throughout the draft. And then at the end, we get to compare and kind of see which one we think we might like better. It's kind of a fun exercise. So, and then, of course, after the first round, we'll do the second round mock moving forward. And then I'll have full draft recaps after day two and day three, of course. So keep it right here on Seahawks Forever and join in the fun. One final thing. I got a comment on the show yesterday. Got the Richard Sherman jersey back here. Sherman hasn't shown a lot of love to the Seahawk organization lately. And someone suggested I should take that jersey down for at least the time being. Give me your vote. Yes or no? Leave it up. Take it down. I've got others I can put up there, including some older classic jerseys. Tell me what you think, and I'll go based on viewer vote. Until then, follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. Thank you for watching. As always, forever and always, go Hawks.